What I want to share with you this evening, and it's really it's like a 3 or 4 day retreat rather than a 1.5 hour sort of, actually 1 hour sort of sharing. And it really questions some very basic things that maybe we hold sacred. Mainly, when we meditate, what's actually going on? Because we do notice, I don't know about you, but there should be probably more results from our meditation practice than there really are. And I mean, I've gone into this in myself. And in at the beginning of the year, we had a four or five day silence retreat in which, for me, it's not such a big deal to be silent physically. In fact, my normal state of being is not saying very much unless people come and talk to me. Otherwise, I stay pretty quiet. And I've always had a great love for silence. And once in my life, I spent 6 months totally in silence and alone. This is before Gyan even. So it gave me a lifelong love for silence. But then, you know, it's not really when you're face to face with yourself. And you can't pretend, like, you know, what mask that I'm going to wear today, you know. And then you have to look at yourself. You go inside and, you know, what's going on. That's when you have to meet silence. The inner commentary that sort of accompanies what we do and say and feel and even our attempts to understand things. That commentary, we have to question who is actually talking to whom. Plato said that thinking is the soul talking to itself, but it's really not just, we just talk to ourselves, is that what thinking is? I really don't think so. I mean, it's something a little bit deeper than just talking to ourselves. Sorry, Mr. Plato. I started to reflect on this when somebody asked me what language I thought in, because I speak a few languages. It was a pretty strange question because I had never really considered it, you know. Okay, which one? And then I started to sort of figure it out. Well, maybe if I'm in Argentina, I'll be thinking in Spanish, or in Brazil, I'm thinking in Portuguese. But then I started to see, well, there's also a thinking that doesn't happen in languages, right? And it's really unconnected with words even. If I say the word sun, what comes into your mind is not the word, it's the thing, right? It's the sun. If I say rose, it's not the word rose that comes to mind, it's the image. So there is a lot of images and feelings and not just words that occupy our minds. And I started to look at this inner commentator, you know, and how, if we're really into silence, we have to sort of touch that which everything is hung on, in a sense, because silence is a backdrop for everything. It's a backdrop for existence, even. It's a backdrop for the cycle. And I have to sort of see how things are without any words, basically. Sounds a bit zen, doesn't it? But how things are without the words. And how am I without the words? And am I just speaking to myself and convincing myself that I'm meditating when actually I'm just bending words around in my head? I'm shifting and shoving one thing, things from one side to the other. And we feel very sort of very intelligent when we're able to deduce that six is the same as a half a dozen, right? We think that it's different. Wow, half a dozen. It's not, it's the same thing. So really our thinking shouldn't just be redefining the same things. Aha, you know, now I've understood it. I had an experience last year, actually 2 years ago. They picked up a book of mine that I translated. It was a pretty bestseller when it was published in Brazil. It actually got into the charts in the newspaper. And I had translated it. At the time I was sort of sitting around. Nothing was happening with it. And then then Eternity Inc. sort of found it somewhere. I'm not out there pushing books or anything. So, oh, we found your book, we'd like to publish it. So I went to Australia and I said, okay, I'll have a look at it. I'll have a look at it because I translated like 20 years ago. It's a bit weird. You write a book and then you have to translate it into your own language. So then it's sort of the whole thing of words and, you know, what they mean and how they mean. It's a bit strange. And then I looked at it, I thought, oh my God, how pedantic we were in those days. You know, we state things very boldly and, you know, without any sort of intellectual support. Consciousness is blah, 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 you know. And I started to pay attention. It has to be, it doesn't mean that because we can use words intelligently that we've actually understood that what they symbolize or signify. And so going more deeply into this, I rewrote the book basically. It was all about consciousness. I guess it's going to come out this year. It's called The Ultimate Frontier. But I rewrote it in a way that, well, instead of saying this is like that, how we normally give courses, or we used to, I said, well, when I understood this, this is what happened to me. And then I was in a situation, then I could understand what it meant, you know. So I was telling how I was processing it. And it seemed to me that there's a different way of talking to ourselves about the same things. And so, you know, most of us look at time as a line where we're sort of born here and we die here. That's our physical concept of time, and really the rest of it is like a pretty big jump of our imagination, because though we're theoretically we can understand that eternity, it doesn't necessarily mean that we experience it, right? And, you know, when you're coming up for your moment of glory, you know, you're leaving the body, maybe at that point you think, oh my God, I haven't got it right yet, you know. So what is this magical, mystical thing of soul consciousness after all, you know? And my life, in fact, is sort of strung in moments and places, right? There's this other dimension, but this... So if you've got one dimension of time and three of space, there's a whole dimension of consciousness, because everything that happens doesn't only have a time and a place, but has a reason. And what makes things happen is the energy. There's a connection. What's the whole thing of Sato, Rajo, Tamo, you know? It's completely strung up all together. So we build for ourselves a sort of a, you know, little bit of a bit strange cube, isn't it? But okay. Not easy to draw with a mouse. But anyway, there we are in our little prison, right? And it's a portable one. Where we take it with us. Hi, John, how are you? And we shake hands through the bars. Sometimes we give drishti through the bars, right? And really, as Baba said this morning about karmatit, we're with that until we leave it, you know, to some extent or the other. Maybe if we're good boys, we get let out for the weekend, you know. But on Monday morning, there we are again, back into the grind. And, you know, it's not different. It's not really much difference when we, you know. It's not very different at all when we become BKs. We just put a BK in front of everything else. But basically, it's the same sort of challenge. Doesn't mean that we magically conquer ego just because we dress up in white and we stick a badge on. Maybe we change the books, right? You know, the bhakti book. We maybe put a picture on the wall and put a mat there to meditate. But we carry it around with us. And, you know, we forget, for example, that we are, let's say this fellow's name is Joe, right? Or even BK Joe, right? How often is he conscious that there have been other such boxes? And in the future, we don't know which is the next one. And how, in fact, my reality is much more connected with this line rather than Joe. In fact, as a soul, I'm equidistant from Joe and Jonas as I was from the Maria that I was in my past birth, you know, or the whatever, you know, Ravi that I was a few births ago. The distance between me and this body as a soul is the same distance from me and any other body. And it's the same distance from me and any other story that I've been through. To any other set of roles also, even BK roles. So soul consciousness really is, as Baba was saying today, is the solution in body consciousness. It's so pervasive. It sort of takes over everything. So this limited ego, Jonas, we could call it, it's not that I, and this is probably where we make a mistake, at least I'm sharing what my own internal inquiry produces when I'm in a deeper state of silence. It may be not like that, but I'm going to share anyway. It seems to me, because Baba gives us the basics, but we have to get to the jewels ourselves. And it's a big mistake to think that we have to conquer ego. We don't have to conquer. You see, the ego is not the problem. It's the way I use it. So a lot of BKs are trying to annul their egos, which is ridiculous. And this morning I was with the class in Kensington, and there was a sister there from Greece, and she confirmed. And the word ego is just a Greek word, it means I. If you say, and she, I can't remember what she, how she did it, but if I say in Greek, I'm going to the bank, it's ego going to the bank. it's pronounced a little bit ego, right? Ego going to the bank. So for our Greek brothers and sisters, it must be a big deal to conquer ego, right? It means I. Freud probably messed things up when he sort of associated that word with something else. But the word for in Hindi for arrogance is probably even more clear. Ahamkar. Ahankar means I, car means my creation. So it's the I caught up in what it does. It's the I caught up in what it's created. So it's like, and then you get a real idea of this prison that we carry around with. It's in that prison, it's everything I've done, everything I can remember, everything that has been important to me, you know. It's been in my struggles there, you know. I can't leave my struggle behind unless there's traffic control. Anyway, this limited ego, which is the set of our bodily identity, the roles that we have to play and their ramifications, right? And also the story. In Brazil, we've got a very famous song called Gabriela. And it's like this. She sings this song. She's sort of a bit of depressing sort of song, but she gets out of it at the end. She sings like this, more or less. I was born like this. I grew up like this. I'm always going to be like this. I'm Gabriela. And it's like, I can't change. This is what I am. You know, it's like condemning herself to be, you know, what she can, you know, that set of what she can think about. And of course, who suffers? She suffers, right? Joe suffers. So this is the mediator. This limited ego, unfortunately, is the mediator between our deeper inner state and the world. Now, we may have a very good impulse starting out here, but it gets sort of twisted up before it gets here. And the information coming back from here gets really sort of distorted before it gets back to here, right? So we have to, really, if we want to get our efforts right, we have to sort of change what I've called the locus, which means in Latin the location, where you work from. Change your locus from there to here. That's what we have to do. So if I'm interacting from a deeper state rather than from an ego state, which is like the role or the body or the senses or whatever. And, you know, which of these two things, if you say, oh, it's really... And you hear it now, you can see it in your language. Oh, this has been a really difficult week for me. Right? Which me had the difficult week? I can't get along with you. You know, I've tried. I can't do it. You know, if I carry this around in my mind, this idea, this limited idea of Joe, it could be like this, you know. I was born in this place and then this happened. I grew up, my parents fought a lot, they divorced, it really affected me. I managed to scrape through school. I got a sort of a lousy degree and I managed to get a job somewhere, and you know, my first few jobs were really difficult. And I got married, didn't work out, this happened, that happened. Now I'm going to Raj Yoga, I'm learning to meditate. You see what I mean? It won't work. So you carry this idea of yourself around. And that idea of yourself is the one that has difficulties. It's the one that gets tired. It's the one that makes excuses. It's the one that sort of, you know, puts off things. Because it's like, you know, if you have a... It's as if we've delegated to our limited sense of self the job of our spiritual effort, which is a... It's the last one that you'd trust, really. And there are a few things I detected in myself, 10 sort of noisemakers. Internal noise is from the limited ego. If we want silence, this is the noise that we have to reduce, not the physical noise. It's not even the verbal noise. It's the deep inner noise that comes from this unceasing or incessant commentary on what we're doing and what we're saying and what we're thinking and what's going on, and if we're hungry or not, if we're angry or not, if, you know, whatever. And if that is our creation, and this is another thing that sort of in my deep reflection I could see, that our spiritual inheritance comes from Baba, right? But this physical identity is the inheritance of my past actions. Yeah? So everything, the body, I've inherited how? You know, what was it that brought me to these genes, you know? What was it that brought me to this format? What was it that brought me to the situation where I could learn or could speak or I could get educated or whatever? It's, so the whole thing that the and this is probably a little bit why most BKs are a bit schizophrenic, because we have two births in the same body. We have a spiritual one and a physical one. And it's the best birth in the worst body also. Right? After a long string of cars, this is the worst model in the lot, right? And it's my inheritance also. And I can't sort of sneeze at the physical inheritance. I just can't say, ah, you know, I don't want you anymore. If it is my creation, my physical limited identity, I have to learn to love it, not to hate it. I have to embrace it, not to kick it away. Because it's my creation, it's my child, in a way. And so, if I love it, I can understand it. If I can understand it, I can work with it better, basically. I have to at least have mercy, you know, if not love. But the this whole thing, and here I'm going to give some questions, and I just have at the end I've given you a link. You can get all of these questions, a bit of an explanation, so that you can work on them. Maybe other questions, but these to me seem to be the main ones, about how to work and how to become really silent and how to be successful every time you meditate, basically. Every time you have a meditation, you can go into a deep stage. And therefore you start to see transformations very clearly in your life. So the first one is this limited ego is the mediator or the gatekeeper between my internal state and the external world, what I just said. So what's the question there? What's the question there? What do I have to do to relocate my sense of self in this deep state of being rather than in, you know? You can check your language. You say, oh, it's, you know, It's been really tough this week. I don't think I can sit through another meeting, right? I don't know where things are going. Which eye doesn't know? Which one's thinking that things are tough? You know, it's not which one is not being able to make it, and which one is not getting on with someone else, right? Which one meditates, actually? Joe doesn't meditate. Joe simulates meditation. Pretends. Even says the right words. Right? Even tells others. Like Bubba was saying today, you know. What's the use of being a good speaker if you're still body conscious? That was today's Molly, right? In fact, this morning I remembered a phrase from St. Paul in one of those beautiful letters he used to write to the first churches. Even if you could speak the language of angels, without love you would be nothing. That's St. Paul. Even if you could speak like an angel, if you didn't have love, you wouldn't be anything. So, when I meditate, is it the soul that meditates? That Bubba doesn't have anything really to do with Joe? That's my problem, not Bubba's. That's my thing to sort out. So when I meditate, I have to become soul. We know that, right? But so the limited ego says, leave it with me. I'll look after your soul consciousness for you. Don't worry. I know exactly what you should be doing. Just leave the keys of your happiness with me. I'll take care of you. I'll keep your belly full and your pockets loaded. Right? That sort of thing. So what do I have to do so that every time I sit to meditate, I'm able to go into that deep sense of self and, you know, look at the distance between me and my Joe identity, right, is the same distance between me as a soul and anyone else's physical identity, actually. I'm separate as a soul. Though it's like, these are my clothes, these are the things that I have to do. But if I live, you know, very reduced in my perspective, which happens if I'm really embodying Jonas, right? It's like looking at the world through a keyhole. You don't see very much. And it's so funny that we think and think and think in order not to think. So it's such a paradox. We speak and speak and speak so that we shut up, really. And we do and do and do so that we don't need to do it anymore, right? So the aim of thinking is to not think. The aim of speaking is to be quiet. And the aim of doing is to finish doing. Isn't it? So, that's the first question. Think about it. These are just a bunch of questions to help you. So where is your meditation? You know, can you get off quickly? Can you detach from those three main characteristics of the physical identity, which is the body and the senses and their objects, the roles and the responsibilities is one aspect, and the story itself. I did this, I did that, this happened, that happened. I really had a hard time in the last 12 months, and now, you know, I've gone to Madhaban, I'm meditating. Am I detached from that whole baggage that I carry around with me? And if not, why not? And if I am, how do I get out of it? Right? Maybe, And this is when I've shared with some BKs, they say, oh my God, I've been meditating for 10 years and now I finally understood what it is, you know. So the second question is, again, it's created a sense of identity, which is these two are the two basic things, these first two. People are so much caught up in their physical identity. And I find, you know, BKs also. Do you think that there's a little bit of cultural body consciousness in BKs? What do you think? Yeah? Even in India, between the south and north of India and the south of India, oh, this person's a South Indian, what do they know? You know, I've seen it, isn't it? But we're so much caught up in our cultural stuff and religious stuff. Maybe time in Gyan is a big deal also. I was brought up by Daddy Janki personally, you see. Right, and you know what the universe says to that? So what? How are you now? Don't rest on laurels from the past, right? Baba said today, how is your behavior? Isn't it? Check your behavior. That's the real gauge of where you're at. So, how easily can I do that? I mean, these are the two basic, there's another eight questions. These are the two basic ones. Am I absolutely sure at all times that I'm Baba's child, or does it sort of, I have to sort of remind myself? What did Baba say today? If you really understood who it is that's talking here, right? That means we spend some time of the day not in the consciousness that Baba's, our father, teaches at Guru, all that. We forget otherwise. So that's the two main ones. Then there are other ones. This is also something pretty basic. The only source of Joe's fulfillment is his body. Right? You find Brahmins talking a lot about recipes. Right? Some repression going on there, don't you think? So is my desire, this is the question that I get from that, to what extent do I have a burning desire? That desire that's all-consuming for my spiritual development beyond my sense organs, beyond anything I can see or touch or feel or taste. How deep is my desire to really grow spiritually? It should be the biggest of all desires. It should be sort of, should consume us, actually, that desire. It's one desire that finishes all desires, in a sense, isn't it? So think about it. This is our talk today, is just think about it, you know. Think about it. This is a big one. The limited ego puffs itself up on the basis of what it knows, isn't it? Knowing is not the same as being, is it? Not the same. But the limited ego, unfortunately, thinks it is. Because you know something, you actually think that you do it. You know. How to check that? Look at this one. This is, I ask myself, how can I check this one? How much understanding and sense of charity do I have towards others whom I classify as having unlimited intelligence, but however maybe have more spirit of service of love than me? How do you handle slow people, for example? Can you do it? Who has difficulty? Be honest. If you're fast in your processing and you have to work with someone who's slow thinking, how is it? Or the other way around. You're a pretty, you know, you dawdle along, you have to work with people that are really fast. Who's more correct, the fast ones or the slow ones? Huh? Both of them. So getting along with someone who's intellectually different from you, is it easy? Is it hard? If it's not easy, why? You know, there's subtle judgment there, isn't there? And who's doing the subtle judgment? It's Joe. Good old Joe. There he is. You know, I've done this, I've done that. And the basic, you know, Baba said today such profound things like the real self-respect is based on being the master, almighty authority. So there's a spiritual authority which is the basis of self-respect. And not what you know, or how quick you are, how you're, you know. This is one thing that I've observed. In studying the different accounts of the cycle, you know, the traditional Hindu view, one of the traditional Hindu views of the cycle is that in the beginning there was truth, but no real need for intelligence, because you wouldn't have to figure anything out. We didn't have to break our heads to make the nature produce fruits and grains, right? Or energy even. Everything was pretty automatic. So as the cycle went on, we became less and less truthful and more intelligent. So that we reached the end of the cycle when we're really intelligent and completely false. So if we try to use intelligence to work out this puzzle that God's given us, we're not going to get there. It's not the sort of thing that intellectual intelligence can sort out. You can put the ideas okay. But to get to the essence, you have to go beyond the wordsmithing. You know what that means? The crafting of the words, the organizing of the ideas, and the beauty of the concepts. You have to go beyond that, isn't it? So I told this story this morning. It's a Zen sort of story. And this Zen monk spent 5 years in silence staring at a wall, right? And when he got back to the monastery, they asked him, "What did you discover?" And he said, "I discovered that noses are vertical and eyebrows are horizontal." That's it? That's it. What he wanted to say, of course, was things are, right? That's it. Three signs, right? things are as they are. And we put so much into sort of things, and Baba's Gyan is so simple actually. All problems are caused by body consciousness. All solutions come from soul consciousness. That's it. Isn't there something more? But, you know, the intellect that's been trained to intellectualize starts to, you know, count the hairs on Narayan's head. Anyway, this is another one, big one. The limited ego prioritizes activities on the basis of a four scale of values. What do you value in your life? What do you value even in the service that you do? This is what I was asking myself. What is valuable? What? There's nothing as valuable as me, in a sense. I'm not talking about Joe. I'm talking about the soul. I am the valuable one. So whatever I do and however I do it should not diminish my deeper intrinsic value. And it should not diminish anyone else's value. Because that's the sort of, you know, all of us have been in those sort of games, right? Where, what's it called? One-upmanship. I'll have the last say here. I have to have the last word here in this talk, you know. When there's a conflict on, it's really so quite funny. It must be, this Baba says, you children play such amusing games, right? I've got my TV set up here in the subtle region. I just watch you. It's so amusing. Baba says like that, right? It's so amusing. You know, it's like a mouth tied to an ego. And you, right? What do we value? So the question here that I ask myself is, how many things do I still do or chase that do not add value to my spiritual development? It may be here is not a what, it could be a how also. The way that I do something, not just what I do, but how I do it, does that add value, subtract value, keep things pretty much the same? Do I have a sense of growth? Do I still just sort of skating around? Am I growing? I'm pretty much the same as I was 10 years ago. I know BKs that if you ask them when they first came in Ghana, there was a bit of a big shift initially, but after 20 years, pretty much in the same space, you know. So what's been going on? Obviously they set into they've set themselves into a rhythm which isn't sufficient, and it's a mindset really that's not enough to do what has to be done. So, number six, this is another big one, the distortion that happens. Things that, and this is probably, if I ask myself, and I do ask myself, the thing that I most valued and I was most looking for before Baba, I was looking for clarity. I was looking for a way out of the confusion, right? And when things are clear, if they're really clear, you don't need to think about them anymore. Yeah? You don't need to talk about them anymore either. If something is clear between you and someone else, you don't need to talk about it anymore. And if something's clear for you, you don't need to talk with yourself about it anymore. It's clear. So if you find yourself talking a lot to yourself about many things, it's because probably this is happening. This is what I've discovered. What a big noise created this one. What's real here? When I say real, the way that I define my life, is it real? Is it that's how it really is? Or am I just sort of fooling myself? Have you found yourself telling a similar story sometimes, or you hear others? I see some souls after 5 years, after 10 years, they come with the same story, that it's as if the 5 years didn't happen between the last time I spoke to them and now. It's the same knee that doesn't work, you know, or it's the same project that's not happening, or the same difficulty in a relationship that hasn't been worked out. Have you found that sometimes? You find yourself telling similar stories that you've told in the past? So, how real? If I, you know, and as an exercise here, write down the way you describe your current setup and try to change the way you describe it. In our minds, we have an art gallery, and there are pictures in that art gallery of people and situations, right? And underneath each picture and underneath each situation, there's a caption: so-and-so, difficult, be careful because the last time you talked to that individual, this happened, right? Now, so-and-so, pretty good value, still got to be wary because a bit sneaky, right? You know, underneath every person, every situation, there's a definition. Wipe those definitions out and let things be. Try to see things and people as they really are, and not as your limited ego tells you that they are. Maybe the soul is still in prison because of its own definition of its situation, isn't it? You've created the bars and you're still talking about those bars to yourself. You know, one of the bars could be difficult with so-and-so, right? And you still continue to talk to yourself. This bar is difficult. I can't move it. I've tried. I can't budge it, you know. So, this is another one too. This happens as we grow up, because apparently when we're little babies, there's no sense of separation. Where my hand ends and the crib starts, there's no sense of, you know, the mother's finger and my hand, it's all one thing, isn't it? And as we're sort of playing with our playmates, there's no sense of, you know, I am me. This thing of I am me and my things comes up as we grow. As we settle into the physical identity, as we settle into the roles that come up, and as we settle into our own story, right? So those things are there. And the way for me to check this, I ask myself this question: when was the last time you were really in the consciousness of we? How was it? Most of the time we're a bunch of me's, right? Even in a service meeting, have you ever noticed that? A bunch of me's and sometimes there's a we where people sort of start to resonate at exactly the same level. But this thing of separation, it's an illusion. Because if you're in a situation, you can never say, that has nothing to do with me. If you're in it, it definitely has something to do with you, right? Isn't it? So what do you think? Just quickly, and then you can talk with a couple of people here. This is another one. It creates a false sense of security. Things that ultimately don't give me any support. Sort of just a fake thing. And so the question that I ask myself here is, okay, if I lost everything, if I lost all of the things or the people to which I feel some sort of a dependence, lost everything, job, car, money, family, house, food, everything. I was back to eating grass, like Baba said yesterday, right? I would still exist, right? How would it be? Would I still be sort of in whole? You know, would I be shattered? You know, it's going to happen when we leave the body. This one. That's exactly going to happen. So may as well train, right? How would you be? Nothing. No global house. No sort of warm hot water bottle in the winter. Pardon? No water to have a bath in. No? Imagine. Nothing. Just you and Baba. It's useful to think like that. And there are two more. This is a big one. The limited ego restricts and interferes with my spiritual development because it knows or suspects that if I really develop myself, the limited ego will cease to exist. So fear is basically the fear of extinction of the limited ego. We don't fear death, leaving the body, because we've done it many times. But the ego fears leaving the body because it stops to exist. It fears its own death. The ego fears its own death. So that's why there's so much of games going on. It's called shoring it up, protecting it, and then making sure that it's okay, nurturing it. So the question here is, this is where excuses come in. And excuses are like lying to yourself, right? What are the ones that I use frequently? It's actually the limited ego saying, don't make too much effort. You've done enough. You know, you really worked hard yesterday. Don't have to have a good Amrit Vela today. Come on. Okay, sure, thanks. Go back to sleep. Okay, and the last one, the enormous capacity that we have for self-deception. The big question, are people happier when you arrive or when you leave? Or don't you know? What's your impact on others? When you come into the room, is like a sun coming into the room, or there's sort of a black hole coming into the room? Or don't you know? You have to leave a tape recorder in the room to see what they talk about you when you're not there. People should appreciate our presence, right? But not our absence. Doesn't mean you have to be goody-goody. It means that if you have to even say something, you do it in such a way you don't destroy their feelings. Then they will appreciate even corrections, right? But if you destroy their feelings, they want to see you far away. So, if you made a list of virtues that you have naturally and those that you need to improve, would it be the same list as that people, if I ask people to evaluate me that I work with, would it be the same list? So there's the measure of the self-deception. It should be the same list. So the things that I think I have and they think that I have, well, that's okay. But the things that I think that I have and others don't see it, I'm hiding it. And the things that are on their list, not on my list, I'm blind about. So, what do you think? Okay, let's sit with someone. Which of these do you think is a... I'll just go quickly through them. Sit in groups of twos and threes quickly. So this is the mediator. So which are the ones that you think you need to work on more? Come on, sit with someone. Do you need to relocate? Groups of twos and threes. Do you need to relocate? Is it easy to be in God's God's child? Do you have a burning desire for your own self-development beyond the senses? Do you get along with slow people? Are you still doing things that don't add value to your spiritual life? Do you need to redefine your surroundings, your relationships? Do you need to develop the consciousness of we more? How would you be if you lost everything? What are the excuses that sort of shore up your false sense of support? And how much are you fooling yourself? So what do you think? Which one do you need to work more on, or all of them? Right? Thank you. Give you a couple of more minutes, two more minutes. Okay. Okay. What are you talking about? Hello. Pardon? Yeah, I've opened the Pandora's box here. Hello. Huh? So what have you been talking about? Come on. I mean, this is something that's not going to finish today. It's going to last until the end of the Kalpa. These are just 10 signals. There are probably another 50. This isn't the last statement about these things. But what do you think is most significant for you from what we've been talking about? The most significant thing? Something you heard, something you thought about, something you spoke about. What's the most significant thing for you?
The ego wants to control everything.
Terrible ego. You got to look after him to not do that, you see. What else?
That when it's clear, I don't have to think about it again.
Aha. Don't want to even say anything. What else?
Ego's scared to become extinct.
Ego is scared to become extinct. That's the whole basis of fear. What else?
We are the last ones to recognize how wrong it is.
We are the last one to recognize what the others have already recognized on us.
Yeah. We're the last ones to see what people can see in us. They've been seeing it in us for the last 20 years. Right? What do you think, Kim?
It's about virtues in action, embodiment of virtue. Checking, am I doing things within the consciousness of qualities, peace, love.
Right, okay, good.
If I lost everything, will I exist? Me and Baba, that's the question.
You will exist, but how will you be?
Me and Baba.
Okay, we'll be pretty okay then if it's like that. What about you guys?
We make true things false and false things true. I think that resonates with me quite a lot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's a sort of got a distorted vision of things. It's a bit like this, just to finish off. You know, and this is how it connects up with meditation. Looking at the world through a keyhole. Where you can't see much. And because you can't see much, you are forced to interpret what could be there. not what is there, but what could be there, because, you know, looks like. And of course the ego is having a field day in interpretation, trying to figure out other people's motives. Have you, do you know that one? What a waste of time. And of course, what limits us, and this is the thing where communication breaks down, I'm not talking about communicating information, but communicating understanding. Right? Because I'm seeing the world like this, and the other person's seeing the world like this, and you're saying, look, it's so damn clear, can't you see it? No, I can't see it at all. Of course you won't see it. You won't see it. Because you're both seeing different things. And you're both seeing different things because of your own peculiar limitations. Of course, they come through, as I said, the three main limiting factors that sort of define the parameters of the ego: the body itself, the objects and the senses, and the tasks are responsible through the roles, and finally the events and the experience that make up your story. We need to, when we're talking about detachment is from those three things. It's not really detachment from other people or from things. Because I'm detached from the body, I'm detached from the things. If I'm detached from my roles, I'm detached from the relationships. You know, if I wasn't being too busy to be a super mum or a super dad, right, then maybe I wouldn't be so attached to the children or a super boss, you know, or a super in charge of the paper department in the centre, you know. The super centre coordinator, right? Or sub-centre coordinator, whatever, you know. The role is like, there's something there, it's not me. So if I want to, I have to change those things around, sort of, you know, see the whole picture. Of course, soul consciousness gets me out of the first one, right? I have a greater role to play than, you know, just being in charge of something or in charge of people. My greater role is connected with my deeper purpose. So I'm a peace giver, actually. That's my role. I'm a love giver or a happiness giver. That's my role. And I do that through, you know, being in charge of something or someone. And I'm the protagonist of many lives, not just this one. I've been through many things. It's an interesting word, protagonist. It means the one who agonizes first. No, literally, it's not. I'm not making it up. The one who sort of faces things first, goes through the agony first. Brahma Baba was the protagonist, right, of the new age. He faced everything first so that we could sort of follow along. Probably very similar to Maharati in a sense, isn't it? Sort of opens the way. And I've done that in many places. So nothing new, really, nothing new, not only because it's the cycle repeating, but it's these same sort of sanskars have been around and around and around and around and you know, just permutations of different people and things, but the same sanskars, right? So, in, you know, as I said before, but you know, what is real yoga then in this context? It's not really just pleasant detachment that our meditation commentaries lead us to believe. Because anyone can get into that pleasant state of detachment. You don't have to be a Rajogi even. If half of the first step of Rajoga is what they call mindfulness these days, and there's so much benefit just in that, on the health, then we shouldn't just stay there if we understand things more deeply. And yoga, meditation is really connecting with Baba. If Baba's not in the meditation, not really yoga. Some other thing. And if, you know, I have to learn to detach from all of that stuff, the three main limitations that we were talking about, and I have to sort of, for me, the first step, of course, is the detachment. But there has to be an element of feeling and emotional sort of relationship with Baba in the meditation. That has to be there. I have to connect up with loving feelings with Baba so that my intellect can take a rest. And I can just sort of stay there in that loving sort of connection. And for that I have to have if we're going to have a heart-to-heart conversation with God, I have to have something to talk about. You know, I'm not going to sit like a dummy and sort of, well, I'm here, tell me something. But really, and really, for me anyway, it doesn't have anything to do with seeing things or seeing golden red light or ghostly forms of Brahma Baba. It doesn't happen for me. It's all feeling and a sense of presence. And I really don't know where it happens. I'm not even concerned where it happens, as long as it happens. And in that heart-to-heart, then, you know, sooner or later, quicker or a little bit later on, I come to some sort of a conclusion in the conversation that I need to be more this or that. Baba doesn't need to change. I need to change, right? So if my meditation is not helping with my transformation, I'm not meditating properly. So at least in meditation I have to have some clear sign that what is it that I need to change further or more deeply? What am I okay with? What am I need to work on? I need to, for example, you know, I need to be more pure, for example. So let me, in my heart-to-heart conversation with Baba, come to the conclusion that, let's say, I need to be the embodiment of purity. So let me experience that. For a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And I think that if the meditation doesn't get to that stage, I really haven't meditated. I've done something. I sort of just flapped around, you know. It's like the chicken trying to fly. Yeah. Just flapped around for a while and sort of the music finishes and I'm still trying to get detached, or, you know, I'm in the middle of the conversation with Baba. So as long as, if I can get to that last step, which is the becoming the embodiment, then I've got a good chance of making it. Okay? So if you want those questions and with a few more details, I've stuck it on this blog here. If you want the questions, it's there, you can sort of download it. Those same questions but with a bit more explanation of each one. So I say a little bit of, I'm still doing this homework actually, and I'm it's a bit weird, isn't it? I'm sort of sharing my homework with you people, but if you want to use it, you can use it. If you don't want to use it, it's okay. Okay. So let's have some real meditation just to finish off. Press the letter B on the computer. Press the letter B. B for Baba. So, Om Shanti. Thank you for your loving attention and patience.